And we're talking about the dealmakers and pot stirrers on the panels all this week, with the data drawn from Dealmakers magazine, which is published by Gleeson Publications. And starting off tonight with a review of the first half numbers, the top advisors, and what we might expect from M&A and general corporate finance into the second half. On Wednesday, we're going to be profiling Mauritius as an investment and HQ destination as we take the temperature of dealmaking across the continent. And then we're going to round everything off with the state of private equity in South Africa on Thursday. And it's a great pleasure to welcome in studio for a change Quinton Honey, director of Clift Ecker Hofmeyr. Quinton, so glad you could make it.
Hi, Michael. It's good to be back here again.
And on the line, Andrew Brooking, director of corporate advisory at Java Capital. Good to talk to you again, Andrew.
Thanks, Michael. Good evening.
Now, let's kick things off by looking in the rearview mirror a little bit and chat about the first half and do some backward-looking analysis of what the numbers are telling us about the state of M&A. And I think in the second half of the conversation, we'll try and do a bit of crystal ball gazing to see where we're heading in the second half, Quinton. In the first 6 months of the year, we saw 211 transactions by JSE-listed companies announced, valued at some $258 billion. So the value of transactions was actually up on the same period last year, but I think that's largely a function of the weakening rand. The number of deals was down 14%, and I think that seems to indicate that that companies have been quite cautious about doing deals in the first half, which is quite interesting. I think if you consider the last time we spoke about this theme of certainly outbound M&A, why do you think the numbers are down on last year?
Yeah, Michael, if we look at the type of deals that we've advised on this year is definitely a significant downturn in the number of deals as well as value. The first quarter of the year was particularly slow, and then it seemed like there was quite a solid recovery in the second quarter. But this seems to be consistent with the global M&A market in general. But if we look at the deals that we've been involved in, a large number of them, well, firstly, they're probably about half the number we've advised on in relation to last year and years before. And a large proportion of them seem to be in the listed property sector, real estate investment trusts. And the interesting trend there is that of those transactions, a lot of them are outbound and focused on markets such as Europe and Eastern Europe in particular.
And it's a very important trend that we pick up, and Andrew, certainly Java Capital is a specialist in that space. And we saw the bulk of the activity in the size range of, and I'm talking check size here, was deals value between 100 million and a billion for the first half. And out of that, we saw 68 deals announced between that 100 million and 1 billion, valued at just over 23 billion rand. 17 of those were foreign domiciled property companies. So that's almost a third of value in this category, which is a dominant theme here. Does that sort of signal that inward listed property companies, which are perhaps euro and pound denominated, remain quite attractive, certainly as rand hedges and opportunities to tap into a market that really has an appetite for that asset class here in South Africa?
Yes, Michael. I mean, we've seen the real estate diversification. We've seen that given effect to in two broad ways. One way is for domestic REITs and domestic property entities to buy portfolios in markets outside South Africa. And the other is for foreign REITs to inwardly list and provide South African residents with an ability to get exposure or diversification on the JSE. So we've seen a fair amount of activity of both sorts, reflecting that real estate remains a very popular asset class, and listed real estate remains a popular, sought-after way to get kind of some access to yield and some tangible asset underpin. And if you can do it across multiple markets and diversify, well, that seems to be very popular with South African investors.
Is there a particular preferred strategy here that you've discerned through the activity that we've seen? A lot of the executives that I speak to always talk about if you're going into a Poland or a Hungary or an Eastern European market, that it's really important to know who you're dealing with, know the party on the other side, do your due diligence. So it sounds to me like there's a great appetite to rather purchase in countries with a partner rather than bring in sort of a Polish REIT, for example, and secondary list or inward list here on the JSE. What would you say is the trend?
I think that there are always a few themes that drive the strategy. I mean, one theme is that real estate is always a local discipline. So for South Africans to passport or fly into another market and think that they're going to pick the best real estate and buy it and run it well, well, that's just unrealistic. So if you're looking to get real estate exposure in a foreign market, you're going to have a local partner. And without it, you're just not going to have the skills to be competitive. You know, the alternative is to reflect that some of the asset management or institutional investors like their real estate to have a geographic focus. They don't like a single pot that has a broadly diversified global exposure, and they would prefer then to see an established player who is local in the foreign market inwardly list to the JSE and provide them in that way with focused exposure on that market rather than with an investment into a South African entity that has both domestic and offshore assets. So there is room for both strategies, but it will turn on the specifics.
And I know that there was some concern in the local property market about the layer of fees that particular Mancos were adding to a REIT proposition. How is this playing itself out as we see some consolidation in the sector? And certainly there's been a great deal of publicity and I think pressure brought to bear on some of those fees.
So if you look at this dynamic where a listed entity is managed by an outsourced company, this external management dynamic, it's not popular. Investors like the alignment that comes from management being employed and working directly in the listed vehicle. And it's not popular for reasons that include the fee implications where if the assets under management are scaled up, the fee remains a kind of a flat fee based on the value of the assets.
Mm.
And that is one of the components of the lack of alignment that investors don't like. So in the SA real estate listed property space, almost all of the management has internalized, is in the process of internalizing. If you look at the sector by market cap, it's only small players that get away with external management arrangements. And in the early days of a small REIT, it might have cost containment advantages. But once you get to a certain size, you simply curtail your access to capital if you continue to try to go down the external management path.
That's quite interesting. Quentin, when we look at, and I just want to stick with property for a while longer before we move on to some of the other, the hot sectors and themes. When we look at the one major trend here in South Africa, certainly it's been consolidation over the last few years. Is that something that is continuing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's generally been a lot of activity in South Africa between REITs and a lot of portfolios being sold from one to the other. And that's certainly looking at consolidating and trying to find growth opportunities and economies of scale. What is clear is when one looks at a lot of at M&A in South Africa in general, it seems to be looking at the type of deals we've been advising on, it seems to be two types of deals. It's sort of reactionary M&A, which would be deals in reaction to the need to clean up one's balance sheet and get rid of debt by selling off non-core assets and restructuring and all of that. And then there are deals driven by the need to find growth. And growth is the big problem at the moment, mm-hmm. Not only in South Africa, but globally as well. And it's placed a demand on companies to really, really look hard to find ways and innovative ways to exploit growth and look for growth opportunities.
And I suppose that's what that speaks to, one of the strategic levers of M&A in this market. When you have earnings that are sort of trending sideways, if you're just looking to grow organically, then one has to grow earnings via acquisition. It depends on whether or not the acquisition is suited to the business as to whether or not it will be earnings accretive. I know very often M&A is sometimes rather disparagingly frowned upon as only being value accretive to the advisors. But in this market, it seems to be a common theme. When I chat to the executives, was chatting to Gary Chaplin, for example, of Cap International, they're looking for bolt-on strategic deals in the industrial and logistics space because the growth is very difficult to come by just purely organically.
Yes, that's correct. And even though we were talking about the listed property funds looking into other markets, outbound M&A, it's not only limited to the REITs. We've also seen a lot of outbound M&A into Eastern Europe, particularly Poland. Recently, we advised on a deal where Ascendus Health acquired interests in Poland and also in Cyprus. And if you look at that, that follows from, you know, Life Healthcare, which over the last few years has also got back into the foreign market and also acquired interests in Poland. And you'll also note Steinhoff's rather bullish entry into the foreign market, and again that's all driven by aggressive trends to try and to increase growth and find growth opportunities.
Well, I know a lot of analysts would say rather too aggressive with the multiples it's paying to pick up the mattress firm. Andrew, when we look at and let's start gazing into our crystal balls a little bit here, and we look out at the second half. I mean, one certainly gets the sense, and I want to split this into two areas. Locally in South Africa, there seems to be an improving zeitgeist. A lot of the economic surveys have we're at least going to avoid a technical recession, and with the rand strengthening at the moment, there seems to be a bit of confidence seeping back into the political economy. Can we expect that to perhaps lead to an increase in M&A activity in the second half?
Well, I think generally people are feeling pretty bullish. We had an election that went off smoothly, but we're now all waiting to see what the coalition dynamics are going to result in. There is always the possibility for government to do something that again turns investors away. So I think a lot of the quiet times in SA M&A in the first quarter of this year flowed from Nenegate in December. We certainly had lots of deals that were concluded in October or November for implementation quarter one this year that simply fell over because of the volatility that followed from Nenegate. So, you know, we've always got the risk that something domestically will dampen M&A activity in the balance of the year. But certainly our pipeline is absolutely full. We have a lot of pending transactions. We see a lot of activity premised on continuing to access healthy financial markets. And we do, there is a sense that confidence is returning, and for the moment we're feeling relatively okay. I mean, we do face U.S. elections toward the end of the year, and the prospect of a sovereign downgrade again at the end of the year. So, you know, these are the outcomes of the outcome of the U.S. election may be something that has a little bit of a Brexit reminder in it. Mm-hmm. I think if Trump is elected, we're all going to feel that provincialism is triumphing. And of course, a downgrade will be negative for the country.
That said, though, how much is a downgrade already priced into forecasts and the cost of capital and that sort of thing when you sit down and put a deal together?
Yeah, I think a lot of the potential bad news is already factored into the forecasts. So it goes more to that feeling of confidence that. That is the reason why people progress grand projects, irrespective of the numbers.
And then just going to my second part of the question, then in Europe, when we look at doing deals in Europe at these low levels, I mean, negative interest rates in some markets, we've got fairly bullish equity valuations, making equity already expensive as a source of capital. It looks like a lot of the big players are raising their own debt capital, sort of disintermediating the banks to a degree instead of equity. Do you think that debt has become the new equity in the European market?
Yeah, I think that funding as far as possible on debt capital markets is a huge theme around the world, disintermediating all forms of intermediaries. And we are also seeing more activity domestically on the debt side. If exchange control becomes a little more receptive to it, I think we could see inwardly listed debt instruments, so that could offer South Africans exposure to kind of diversified currency earnings by way of debt instruments issued out of foreign markets but listed on the JSE.
Well, that is quite an interesting theme to develop there. Quinton, gazing into your crystal ball for the second half of the year, I mean, just judging by what we've seen in the first half, and you advised on some of the big pharma transactions, they really stood out for me as a theme or a sector that seems to be quite hot at the moment. Are there any other sectors? I know renewable energy was certainly the darling of the ball until Eskom came out and said, well, wait a minute, we don't know how keen we are on renewable energy anymore. Any other sectors that stand out for you?
At this stage, it seems to be a very much a look and see approach. I think a lot of the deals are still being driven by selling off of non-core assets to alleviate debt issues and so on. And I think that's probably going to carry on for the rest of the year until such time as there is more political and economic certainty. One sector which has certainly looked pretty good for us is private equity. There seems to be a lot of interest in private equity at the moment, and that may very well continue. And I assume that's probably because there are some good value opportunities out there from that perspective.
And we certainly saw it with the announcement by Ethos to generate its own LP, for lack of a better word, by listing Ethos Capital on the JSE on the 5th of August, and oversubscribed that. A lot of interest in that business, and it's no wonder when you see that listed equity markets are set to return high single-digit returns versus private equity's double-digit, high double-digit internal rates of return, that investors are looking at that. Andrew, just as we round things off, we are, it seems, still in an interest rate tightening environment, but it seems to me that, failing a policy of our turn, that the SARB kind of has to stick to its guns here, which isn't great for listed property, because we see companies looking to cut back on their loan-to-value ratios. Well, what do you think this might mean in the second half if we continue to see maybe another 25 basis points or even 50 basis points rate increase?
I think it's priced in. I don't think it's going to change the economics fundamentally. In fact, I mean, all around the world, and SA perhaps is no exception, there's much less inflation and less growth than everybody thought there would be 18 months ago. So we seem to be back into a patch of lower for longer. And the world remains volatile and uncertain, so we just can't predict it. I do think that renewable energy is an interesting sector. We're active in that sector. We see the securitization of those cash flows as offering a lot of opportunity. And then I think in the private equity space, what is interesting is the increasing trend. We saw it on Ethos, and we've done a couple of these listings where you list what is effectively a permanent capital vehicle, which replaces the old private equity fund as an entity which raises permanent capital and then deploys it within a theme of some sort. Astoria, Universal, these are interesting examples of permanent capital vehicles, and we see a lot of that as an alternative to private equity funds.
Well, I think very interesting, all of those themes, and we unfortunately run out of time, but I think another interesting thing that certainly emerged from the Savca private equity survey was that fundraising offshore internationally from limited partners has become slightly more difficult, with 50% of the funds raised over the last year from foreign LPs, and that was down from 75% in the prior year. So I think a lot of that has to do with the rand weakness and the currency volatility, certainly some returns being quite adversely impacted by that. But I think it should make for a very interesting second half, as we hope to bump up those numbers and ensure we don't have probably one of the worst years on record when it comes to the volume of deals executed. Thanks to both of my guests tonight, Quinton Honey, Director of Cliffdecker Hoffmeyer, and on the line, Andrew Brooking, Director of Corporate Advisory at Java Capital.